We're going through a tremendous amount of material again tonight, as we sometimes do on these Sunday evenings. You know, I've given the illustration before of telescopes and microscopes. Sometimes we look at the details very close, and sometimes we want to zoom out and see the whole thing at a glance. So this is another telescope evening. We're not going to look at a lot of things in great detail, but we want to fly out nice and far and see the whole big blue marble at one glance. And today, looking at all that Daniel says about the Messiah's coming and his kingdom. And remember, in times past, when we were talking about the uncanny ability of Daniel, by God's help, telling the future, and how crazy that was for him to know, for example, in 530-something B.C., that Alexander the Great would rise up in 330-something and conquer the known world. I mean, that's 200 years, and Daniel nailed it. And he said it would be the king of Greece. It would be lightning fast. And it was just extraordinary. How could Daniel have done this? Now, all of those same chapters, all of those same things that we learned come to bear on tonight's subject. Except tonight, we're just going to look at what's future to us. And my challenge is, if Daniel nailed it at something we can verify in history, like, wow, he got that exactly right. He was spot on. And if he did that in history, then when he comments on what is future to us, he is telling us our future. And once again, as always, because it's scripture, he will nail it. It will be just right. So it's very exciting to consider, and we want to see it all at a glance. So chapter 2, the great prophetic chapters of Daniel are 2, 7, 9, and then 11 and 12 combined. So chapter 2, you remember this is the vision of the image, Nebuchadnezzar's dream that he couldn't remember, and it had to be interpreted. And you remember, it's the image of a man. The head is of gold, the arms and chest are silver, the belly is brass, the legs are iron, and at the end of the legs are feet. And the feet are our special interest tonight. And so look at verse 34 and notice I've provided little bracketed commentary as we go, and then some other points besides. But we've come down the image in Daniel's interpretation. We've covered the head. We've covered the chest and arms. We've covered the belly of brass. And now we're on the legs, the lower legs of stone. So thou sawest that of iron is what I meant to say. Verse 34, thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands. Now picture this. This is what's going to happen. A stone is just going to sort of emerge from a mountain. Nobody cut it out. And it's going to be crashing down on the image, and it's going to blow the image into dust. All right, so that's what's happening here. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon the feet that were iron and clay, and break them to pieces, became like the chaff of the summer threshing floor, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part potter's clay, part iron, the kingdom shall be divided, and in the days of those kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Well, this is a picture of what we call the millennium. It is Christ the stone crashing down and destroying all the kingdoms of the world, then growing up into a mountain that fills the whole world. And that's a kingdom. That's the millennium kingdom. And it stands forever. So you see the first bullet point there. The stone that becomes a worldwide mountain is Jesus and his millennial kingdom. It's both. You say, is the stone Jesus, or is the stone Jesus' kingdom? In all of these prophecies of Daniel, the king and the kingdom are used interchangeably. They're stitched together. So I've given you an example from this very chapter when Daniel was talking about the head of gold. He looked at Nebuchadnezzar. He says, thou, O king, art this head of gold. You are the head of gold. And then he says, concerning the next kingdom, which is Medo-Persia, he says, and there shall arise another kingdom after you. So are we talking about kings, or are we talking about kingdoms? And the answer is both. You, king, you're the head of gold, and then there's another kingdom, king and kingdom. So what is the stone? Is it Jesus, the king, or is it Jesus' kingdom, the millennium? It's both, and they're used interchangeably throughout. The second bullet there says this fourth kingdom in the vision is the Roman Empire. And if you have previous notes when we talked about this a few weeks ago, you can see on those notes from page 173 how we know that this is the Roman Empire. I can't rebuild all of that for you right now because it would take too much time from tonight's lesson. But that's the Roman Empire. And you see that it has a future stage. That's the stage we would call the Antichrist worldwide or global empire. And we know that the feet are composite. It's said here in the text, partly clay, partly iron. Since that's the case, remember the legs are of iron. You have the belly and thighs of brass, and the lower legs are iron. And that's the fourth empire. The iron empire is the Roman Empire. When you come to the feet, you see they're still iron, but they're iron and clay. That's to let you know that it is still the Roman Empire, iron, but it's the Roman Empire with a twist. The Roman Empire with something different. It's a new stage of the Roman Empire. It's iron and clay brought together. And so from this, we are drawing lots of interesting conclusions about what we call the end times. So we know it's related to Rome. You see there, they must have 10 toes. This empire, pictured as a man, has feet of iron and clay, and you'll see the toes are actually mentioned in the text. I've underlined it for you that the toes, part iron, part clay, you see the toes mentioned in verse 41. There would be 10 of these because this is the image of a man. And I've given you the references at the end of that paragraph. You see that in chapter 7, we're going to see that the Antichrist Empire has 10 governments joined in a coalition. You can see that in chapter 9. It's related to Rome. We'll talk about that in just a minute. And Revelation 17:12 says Antichrist comes to power with 10 kings. So in chapter 2, we see the Roman Empire. This would be the legs of iron that transition into feet of iron and clay because it's the Roman Empire renewed, the Roman Empire revisited. We call it the revived Roman Empire, and that's the Antichrist Empire. So when Antichrist comes to power, you should look for him to come to power in approximately the same land area where the Roman Empire was long ago. That's why it is so interesting that the United States is on the descendancy. We're not nearly as important as we used to be in world events. And Europe is on the ascendancy with the unity of Europe right now. They are posturing for rise while we are posturing for decline. And that's very interesting. All right. So chapter 2 says that when Jesus comes back, the stone that comes from the mountain out of nowhere, nobody made this stone because the stone is God. It is Jesus, comes and it hits the image at the feet, not in the head, not in the chest, hits the image at the feet. That's the last empire, Antichrist Empire, and blows the whole thing to smithereens. And then it grows into a mountain, a kingdom that covers the whole world. And that's the future, according to Daniel. So all of our empires are in order: Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, revived Rome, pow, the coming of Jesus to start his kingdom, his empire that lasts forever. We call that the 1,000 year millennium. That's chapter 2. Now watch chapter 7, and you're going to see approximately the same information repeated, clarified in chapter 7. So verse 7 of chapter 7. Oh, and so the background of this, you know, we have four beasts. Once again, the four beasts, and you'll find this in your previous notes. I think that's page 173. Yes, page 173. If you look back, you'll see the other notes for this. So these are beasts. And then the vision of the beast, the first beast is the lion that represents Babylon. The second beast is a bear with one side more powerful than the other side, lurching up on one side. That's Medo-Persia. So Babylon, Medo-Persia. The next one's a leopard. That's Greece because he was so fast. A winged leopard. That's Alexander the Great conquering the world in 3 years. That's a winged leopard. So you have Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and then Rome. The fourth beast is Rome. Just like the image vision, the head, Babylon, chest, Medo-Persia, belly and thighs, Greece, legs, Rome. You have the same thing here. All right. So verse 7 of chapter 7. After this, I saw the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast. The fourth beast is going to be Rome. Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome. Number four is Rome. Behold, a fourth beast. It's like a dragon, dreadful and terrible, strong exceedingly. He had a great iron teeth. There's the reference to iron again, same as the iron legs in chapter 2. Iron teeth. It devoured, it broke in pieces, it stamped the residue with the feet, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So remember, before when we were talking about Rome, we had 10 toes. Now we have 10 horns. And we find this fourth beast is mighty. It's the mighty Roman Empire in history and something more. Verse 8. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of man, and a mouth speaking great things. All right, so you have Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome. So the fourth beast is Rome. But now all the attention goes to the 10 horns on this beast. It's Rome still. Obviously, it's Rome. But now there's something special happening. This is Rome with a twist. This is Rome and something more. This is what we call the revived Roman Empire. So verse 9. I beheld until thrones were cast down, we would say, laid down, set down. So there are these thrones cast down. And this is the second coming of Jesus, by the way. In the Ancient of Days, that's God the Father, did sit on these thrones, whose garment was white as snow, hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was like a fiery flame. His wheels as a burning fire. Wheels, you know, from Ezekiel chapter 1, right? The wheel in the middle of the wheel, the chariot of the Lord. Verse 10, a fiery stream issued and came forth before him. Thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set. The books were opened. And verse 11, I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn spoke. So you have the beast, and that's a terrible beast. It's like a dragon. But then you have these 10 horns. The 10 horns, that's really interesting. We focus in, zero in on those. And then among the 10 horns, there's one in particular. And when it comes around, it plucks up the other three and takes supremacy of all of the 10. He becomes the greatest, and he comes to power by ripping up three. Now that one gets special attention. Remember now, we're at the coming of Jesus. So we went Babylon, history, Medo-Persia, history, Greece, history, Rome, history, and now revived Rome. And revived Rome is in place when Jesus returns. So to go on in, say, verse 11. I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn spoke. This is the little horn that tore up three. I beheld even till the beast was slain. We happen to know from the book of Revelation, killed and cast into the lake of fire. Revelation 19:20. And his body destroyed and given to the burning flames, same as Revelation 19:20. In verse 13, I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man. So the Ancient of Days, God the Father, Son of Man, you know. That's the coming of Jesus. One like unto the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven. The second coming of Christ is always with clouds. Behold, he cometh with clouds, and every eye shall see him. It's always the same. And so he comes with the clouds of heaven. He comes to the Ancient of Days, God the Father. They brought him near before him, and there was given unto him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. In chapter 2, it was the stone that crushed the kingdoms of this world, grew into a mountain that covered the whole earth and can never be destroyed. Now we have this kingdom given to the Son of Man, and it's an everlasting kingdom that cannot be destroyed. That will bring us to verse 18. But the saints of the Most High, this is especially Jewish Christians, the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Verse 19. Then Daniel says, I would know the truth of the 10 horns. Let's go back to those 10 horns. The fourth beast was really spectacular, but I want to know more about the 10 horns. That would be like in our Daniel 2 vision. I want to know more about the feet that are part iron and part clay. Here Daniel says, I want to know more about the 10 horns on this fourth beast. Tell me about that. So verse 19, that I would know the truth of the 10 horns that were in his head and the other horn, whose look was more stern than his fellows. I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints. This is, again, especially Jewish Christians in the tribulation, a la Revelation 12, etc. And it prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came. That's exactly what we read in many places. Israel is being persecuted until Jesus comes. The Ancient of Days, of course, is God the Father, but they are coming together to set up the judgment. God the Father, God the Son. So declaring war, prevailing against them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. And the time that the saints possessed the kingdom, verse 24, the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings. So we don't have to guess what these horns are. We're told, oh, you know, the fourth beast, it has 10 horns, and the 10 horns are 10 kings. So we're told, we don't have to guess. 10 kings that shall arise, and another, the little horn, shall arise after them. He shall be diverse from the first. He shall subdue 3 kings. He comes to power by conquering 3 others. And he shall speak great words against the Most High God and shall wear out the saints. So once again, war on the saints. And you'll think to change times and laws. Jewish people won't be able to have their holidays. We're not going to observe that time anymore. Ignore that. Sabbath days. We're not going to observe that anymore. He wants to change the holidays. He wants to change the Jewish laws. He wants to upset the Jewish worship in the tribulation. And they shall be given into his hands. And look what it says. Until time and times and half a time. We'll talk about that in just a minute. That's 3.5 years. But the judgment shall sit. They shall take away his kingdom, Antichrist's kingdom, to consume and destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion of the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. All right, so look at some of my bulleted points here. All four of the beasts, of course, are world empires. The fourth beast is the Roman Empire, just like chapter 2. And you can again see the previous notes, page 173, if you have forgotten how that goes. The 10 horns, the second bullet down, the 10 horns are 10 kings or kingdoms, however you want to say it, from a 10-part global empire that is rooted in the ancient Roman Empire, but enters a special stage, like the legs of the chapter 2 image, transition to feet, part iron, part clay. Now we have the beast transitioning to the 10 horns especially, and then one horn especially among the 10. We know again about the 10 toes from chapter 2, the 10 kings from Revelation 17:12. So all this is very familiar territory. This is in place at the return of Jesus. Remember, this is what it looks like when Jesus returns. That's why it was so confusing for the disciples when they thought, well, Messiah is here. And everything Daniel said, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, we're in Rome. And Rome is supposed to be in power when Jesus comes. And Jesus is here. And Rome is in power. We know what this is. But what they failed to realize was that it was going to be Rome in power with a twist. Rome, but not legs of iron Rome. Feet of iron and clay Rome. Rome, but not just the fourth beast in general. Rome with the 10 horns and one particular little horn. That's the way it has to look when Jesus takes over the kingdoms of the world and starts the millennium. And that was a very subtle difference. They would have been the disciples would have been completely right to say Jesus is going to bring his kingdom right now. The mountain that fills the world, the Ancient of Days meeting together with the Son of Man and starting the everlasting kingdom. They would have been just right if in the Daniel 2 vision there were only legs of iron and no feet. Or the Daniel 7 vision there was the fourth beast but no horns and little horn. Then they would have had it right. But what they missed was that there was a stage, a new stage of the Roman Empire, and that had not occurred yet. Now, there certainly didn't need to be 2,000 years between the legs of iron and the feet of iron and clay. There didn't need to be 2,000 years between the fourth beast in general and the 10 horns that he has and the little horn in particular. There didn't need to be 2,000 years separating the head from the horns, the legs from the feet. That's the way it turned out. It may have been that if the Jewish people had responded differently, we would have had only 7 years between Calvary and the millennium. There has to be 7 because Daniel already told us that there would be the 70th week. So we have to have 7 years between Calvary and the millennium. But there only needed to be 7 years in this scheme. As it turns out, because of Israel's unrepentance, there has now been 2,000 years. Well, look at my bulleted points there again. The third bullet down is talking about this 3.5 years, which figures so prominently into Bible history, particularly in Daniel and Revelation. So the 3.5 years of verse 25 corresponds to the second half of the tribulation, just like time, times, and half a time when it occurs in Daniel 12:7. So we have it here in verse 25, but we have it again in Daniel 12:7. And here's how it goes. So if you just, for the sake of argument right now, just say time is 1 year, times, plural, two more, and half a time, well, that's half. For now, let's say it's 1 year plus 2 years more, that's three, plus half, that's 3.5. All right, you say, well, how do you know time is supposed to be a year? Well, we have help on that, so continue that third bulleted point. So this is just the same as chapter 12 and verse 7 and Revelation 12:14. It's also like in the midst of the week. So you remember Daniel 9:27 is going to talk about the 70th week of Daniel. And that week, as we'll see in a moment, is 7 years. And in the midst of the week, that would be 3.5 years. So we keep coming to 3.5 years. But it's even more clear when we come to Revelation 11:3 and Revelation 12:6, where there are specifically mentioned 1260 days. 1260 days is 3.5 years. And then, so we can't possibly be wrong, Revelation 13:5 calls the same period of time 42 months. So 1260 days, 42 months, time, times, and half a time in the midst of the week. It's always 3.5 years. Everywhere we go in Bible prophecy, it's 3.5 years. So that's a very important thing that we note for the first time in Daniel chapter 7. All right. Daniel 9. This is the great 70 weeks prophecy, and we've talked about this a little already, so now we're only going to talk about the things that are future to us. So, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people. I want you to know whose people? Daniel's people. Those are Jews. So this prophecy, the 70 weeks prophecy, is not really for you. The 70 weeks prophecy is for Jewish people, Daniel's people. So again, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people, Jews. And upon thy holy city, that's not Chicago or New York. That's Jerusalem. It's not really for Chicago or New York. It's for Jerusalem. So 70 weeks, a very special prophecy for Daniel's people, the Jews, and Daniel's holy city, Jerusalem. And look what happens. When you come to the end, when this 70 weeks is accomplished, you're in paradise. Here's what the world is like. To finish the transgression, no more sin. To make an end of sins. To make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness. Stop there just for a moment. If we're talking about the end of transgression, sin, to bring in everlasting righteousness, you could say, in a manner of speaking, that that happened at Calvary, because Calvary washed away our sins. You say, okay, well, all of that could just be Calvary, but the next part cannot be Calvary. So to go on with those conditions, to seal up vision and prophecy. Well, that hasn't happened yet. That didn't happen at Calvary. We're 2,000 years after Calvary, and vision and prophecy is not sealed up. When we come to Revelation chapter 11, there are these two very special witnesses, and these witnesses minister until the second coming of Jesus. And it says that in the days of their prophecy, certain things happen. These are prophets at a time still future to us. And that's not the only time. Prophecies and very special miracles are mentioned in connection with God's people in the end times. So it would be very wrong to say, at Calvary, we finished all vision and prophecy. That's false. Because then there would be no place for the prophets in Revelation chapter 11. Prophecy is not finished, and that did not happen 2,000 years ago. And the other thing that didn't happen 2,000 years ago is at the end of verse 24, the last thing that happens is they would anoint the most holy. And that's the anointing of Jesus as king over the world. That did not happen yet. It is still going to happen. Now, if you turn your page over. So how do we get to these paradise conditions? Paradise meaning like the mountain that grew and covered the whole earth, like the Ancient of Days, sitting with the Son of Man and setting the judgment and giving the saints the kingdom. How do you come to that? And that's what this is all about. Verse 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem, that's Nehemiah's career. 444 BC is when Nehemiah was commanded to do that. So from Nehemiah's career unto Messiah the Prince. Isn't that great? You have a very specific mention of Messiah right here. Messiah the Prince. And specifically to the death of Messiah the Prince, as you see in the next verse. From that period of time, Nehemiah's commission to Messiah the Prince is going to be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. That's 7 plus 62, that's 69 altogether. The street shall be built again, the wall. Nehemiah is all about building the wall. The wall, even in troublous times, you remember the troubles Nehemiah had in building the wall. So we know where we are there. Verse 26. And after the 62 weeks, and we've already mentioned the 7 weeks, so after 69 weeks altogether, Messiah shall be cut off. So Daniel predicts the death of Messiah. But not for himself. He died for you. And the people of the prince that shall come. The prince that shall come is the Antichrist. It says his people destroy the city and the sanctuary. Well, we know who did that. In 70 AD, the people who destroyed the city of Jerusalem and the temple were Roman people. So once again, we're right back at the Roman Empire, aren't we? We said it's Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, Daniel 9. The people who destroy the sanctuary and the city of Jerusalem, Roman people, these are the same people connected to the great prince that shall come. We call him the Antichrist. So the Roman people are connected to the prince that shall come. So the Roman army of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood of trouble. Unto the end of the war, desolations are determined, terrible destruction. Verse 27. And he, the coming prince, Antichrist, he shall confirm the covenant, some sort of a special promise, a treaty of peace, of protection. He shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. That's what we call the 70th week of Daniel, because we've already accounted for 69. Messiah is cut off after 69. Now we have one more. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and thy holy city. That's what Daniel says. So we have one more week. He shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of that week, 3.5 years, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation, another kind of sacrifice, to cease. He is going to attack Israel. He had a covenant, some kind of a treaty, and then he breaks it halfway through the 7 years, and he attacks them. And now there is going to be terrible trouble. The trouble is described. And for the overspreading of abomination, that's what the Old Testament oftentimes calls idols. The abomination of Moab, the abomination of Ammon, the abomination of the Philistines. Those are idols. And so it says, for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate. Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. The people, the population of Jerusalem, will be destroyed, even until the consummation of the finish, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. Now, I know that's a big text, but look at some of my bulleted points to fill in some of the gaps and see where we're going here. The first one, a week in this vision is the Jewish agricultural week. Remember how the Jewish people who were farmers had to have crop rotation by having 6 years of planting, cultivating, and harvesting? And then 1 year Sabbath, and it was called a Sabbath. And I provided the Leviticus text for you to remind you that was called the Sabbath year. So you think, oh, I know what a Sabbath is. That's the seventh day. But you're forgetting there's another kind of Sabbath to Jewish people. There is the Sabbath year, the seventh year for their crop rotation. And that's the week we're talking about here. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, the seventh year. That's a Sabbath year. So we're not talking about a 7 day period of time. We're talking about a 7 year period of time, the agricultural week. Now, if you'll allow that possibility, then you will see that 483 years, because that's 69 times 7 is 483. 69 weeks will bring you from Nehemiah to Messiah's death. 69 weeks, that's 483 years. That works out. So from Nehemiah's call in 444, to the death of Jesus in 32 is in fact 483 years. Daniel knew that Jesus was going to die 483 years after Nehemiah got his call. That's impossible. That's the most spectacular prophecy in history. Remember that if you and I wanted to have an appointment, the only thing we'd have to know to rendezvous is where the rendezvous should take place and when to meet. If I knew that you were going to be at McDonald's at 8 o'clock tomorrow night, I could find you there. I just need to know that you're going to be at McDonald's at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. That's exactly what Daniel did with Messiah. He said, this is a prophecy for your holy city, that's Jerusalem. And for the time, you count 483 years after Nehemiah's commission, count the years, and you go to Jerusalem, and you can watch Messiah die that year. And that's exactly what happened. That's uncanny. Absolutely supernatural. No honest person could ever look at that prophecy and think that there's nothing to it. Well, the second bullet down. The abomination of desolation is talked about here in verse 27. And you remember that that's talked about by Jesus in the Olivet Discourse. He was looking at his disciples and he says, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, flee to the mountains of Judea. Run. When you see this happen, you run. And so we know in Matthew 24, the abomination of desolation is mentioned in connection with what Jesus called the Great Tribulation. That's Matthew 24:21. The Great Tribulation. Great trouble. He's likening it to a woman who's going to give birth to the baby and she's in transition and her labor pains make her feel like she might die. And in fact, sometimes the ladies did die. Jesus said, that's Great Tribulation. So when you see the abomination of desolation, run, because there's going to be Great Tribulation, worse than the world has ever seen before. And that right before the return of Jesus. So that's very important. The third bullet down. Since clearly the 70th week must conclude with millennial bliss. This is where we started. Remember that list of wonderful things in verse 24. An end of transgression. You're done with all vision and prophecy. Jesus is going to be anointed. Since the 70th week has to end there, we know it's future to our time. We are not there yet. The 70 weeks aren't done. Otherwise, we wouldn't see sin and we would see Jesus anointed, respected, worshipped all the world over. So we're not there. Since that's the case, it is evident that something happened after the death of Jesus, which was the 69th week. Something stopped the clock, if you will. And it broke the progression in the 70-week prophecy, the 70-week timeline. Otherwise, we would be in millennial bliss already. Actually, we would have been past millennial bliss. So the hollow bullet there, this entire prophecy was for Daniel's people, Jews, and his holy city, Jerusalem. Once the Gentile-dominated church was born, probably birthed at the stoning of Stephen, the specifically Jewish timeline of 70 weeks was broken. The Jewish progression will be restored after the rapture removes the Gentile-dominated church and returns the world focus to Israel. So just picture this. From Genesis 12, the calling of Abraham. From Genesis 12 all the way through to Acts chapter 7, the stoning of Stephen. The Jewish people have a virtual monopoly on the Word of God. What is all of the Bible about from Genesis 12 to Acts 7? Just Jewish people and their relationship with the Lord. There are a few little Gentile incidents scattered throughout, but really, the Jewish people have a virtual monopoly on God's judgment, God's special favor from Genesis 12 to Acts 7. In Acts 7, we're introduced to the Apostle Paul, and everything now becomes Gentile, Gentile, Gentile. Well, Daniel, chapter 9, verses 24 through 27, the prophecy of 70 weeks, is about Daniel's people and Daniel's city. And you know what? What we're doing right now here has very little to do with Jerusalem, has very little to do with Daniel's people. We don't have very many Jewish people who fellowship with us here. We're very Gentile-oriented. So the question is, if the whole Bible's focus in Daniel was Jewish people, Daniel's people, how do you get back to that? How do you get back to this tremendous Jewish focus like Daniel's 70 weeks. I mean, we certainly don't have it here. How do you get back to that? And the answer is the rapture of the church. All you need to do is take us Gentiles away on the same day, all the world over, and the whole focus will go right back to Daniel's people, Daniel's holy city, and we go back to where we started, and the clock starts ticking again. That is evidently what the Lord is doing. Now, I want to show you Daniel 11 and 12, chapters 11 and 12, and I don't really have any bulleted points, so I'm just going to run through this rather quickly, the highlights, and show you additionally what Daniel has for end times theology, the coming of Jesus and his kingdom. So chapter 11, verse 36, something about Antichrist. And the king Antichrist shall do according to his will. He shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god. In 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 4, that's exactly what Paul said. The man of sin, the son of perdition, is going to do. Exalt himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. That's exactly this. So he'll magnify himself above every god. He'll speak marvelous things against the God of gods and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that which is determined shall be done. In verse 37, neither shall he regard the God of his fathers. This is the verse that makes us think that Antichrist will be Jewish. You cannot say about a German fellow that he's bad because he has forgotten the God of his fathers. The German fathers were the Teutonic gods, Thor and Woden and Frigg, and we're glad not to remember those. We don't care about that. For this to be a description that has meaning, this is very Jewish. The God of his fathers. Who are his fathers? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. The God of their fathers. This is something you say about Jewish people. This is why we suspect that the Antichrist is at least partly Jewish. And he's disregarding the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. One thing that is interesting, however, is that there is only one other class of persons that this could make sense for. And in light of our current events, it matters. You could say that about Arab people. Because Arab people also descend from Abraham and some of the patriarchs. So, actually, this could be, you remember that Abraham had Isaac and Ishmael. So the Ishmaelites presumably would worship the same God as Abraham. From the Ishmaelites, we get other Arab tribes, and it could be said of Arabs that they have forgotten the God of their fathers. And of course, almost all Arab people are Muslims right now. So it is possible that Antichrist could come from the Muslim world. But the normal use of that term in the Bible, individuals who have forgotten the God of their fathers, that would have been said of Jewish people. Well, to continue. He doesn't regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all. But in his estate, by the way, nor the desire of women, that could certainly be homosexuality. Verse 38, but in his estate shall he honor the God of forces, a God whom his fathers knew not, shall he honor with gold, silver, precious stones, pleasant things. Verse 39, thus shall he do them in the most strongholds with a strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. This is all career of the Antichrist. Verse 40, at that time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots, with horsemen, many ships. He shall enter into the country, shall overflow and pass over. These are wars. And what you have to remember is that even though the Antichrist empire is global, there are wars and rumors of wars. It never ends for him. He is constantly working at maintaining his kingdom. And that's why there's going to be an underground of discontent. And there's going to actually be evidently a Jewish underground. We don't have time to go into that. But he has a hard time. Just because you're the ruler of the world doesn't mean nobody is rebelling. And so he has all of these intrigues going on, people, nations rising up against him. And it's really interesting in verse 41. Look what it says. He shall enter into the glorious land. That's Israel. So once again, the Holy Land becomes the focal point. Isn't that odd? He enters into the glorious land and many countries shall be overthrown. And I'll listen to this. But these shall escape out of his hand. Edom, Moab, Ammon. Those are Arab nations. That is so interesting. Because when you watch the news today, those rascals, you just can't do anything with them. And even Antichrist can't do anything with them. They escape out of his hand. You just can't control those guys. And so even Antichrist can't subdue them. And in verse 42, he'll stretch forth his hand upon the countries. The land of Egypt shall not escape. He can control Egypt. Verse 43, have power over treasures of gold, silver, again, things in Egypt, Libya, Ethiopia. Verse 44, more trouble, wars and rumors of war. The tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore, he shall go forth with great fury to destroy, utterly to make away many more rumors of war. Verse 45, he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas. Evidently, in the Holy Land, between the Mediterranean Sea and probably the Persian Gulf. In the glorious holy mountain, he wants to be established in Jerusalem, which is again what we said in 2 Thessalonians 2. He sets himself in the temple in Jerusalem as if he's God. And that's how chapter 11 ends. Chapter 11 just runs right into chapter 12. The narrative just continues. So chapter 12, verse 1, at that time, when Antichrist is installed in Jerusalem, at that time, Michael, the archangel, shall stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of thy people. So Michael, the archangel, stands for the Jewish people. There shall come a time of trouble, and this is exactly what Jesus said in Matthew 24, a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. Terrible trouble, great tribulation, as Jesus called it. And at that time, thy people shall be delivered. That's a great tribulation. And then special deliverance for the Jewish people who by the end of the tribulation have repented. And you know the story, like from Zechariah chapter 12, Jesus comes to the Mount of Olives, splits the mountain in half, rescues the Jewish people. It's a tremendous scene. So it says in verse 2, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. This is the resurrection of the Old Testament saints. In Matthew chapter 11, it talks about people coming from the east and west to sit with Abraham, Isaac in the kingdom. When the millennium is started, you're going to raise the Old Testament saints. So many of them that sleep in the dust shall awake, some to everlasting life, and later others to shame and everlasting contempt. That's at the end of the millennium when all the dead will be resurrected and the resurrected lost people will be given a body fit for hell. Everybody gets a resurrection body. Some resurrection bodies fit for glory. Some resurrection bodies fit for damnation. But everybody gets a body in the resurrection. At any rate, skip down to verse 3. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, we would say space. And they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. And one angel said to a man clothed in linen, another angel, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? That is, from the time the unprecedented trouble begins until the deliverance when Michael stands up. How long? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which is upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and he swore by him that lives forever and ever, it shall be for a time and times and half a time, 3.5 years. When that great tribulation, remember the tribulation like small letter T, tribulation, the lady's pregnancy, the birth pangs, the beginning of troubles. The whole tribulation is 7 years. But the great tribulation, capital G, great, capital T, tribulation, that's 3.5 years. That's when the lady is not only having labor pains like she's been having for some time, now she's having labor, heavy labor, transition labor. That's the great tribulation. So the question is, how long will it be, you know, till this terrible time, like a nation has never known, begins? And when deliverance comes and Michael stands up, how long? The answer is 3.5 years, just like we've seen in the other texts. And then there are these other numbers that just sort of tantalize us. So you see verse 11. And from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, that's when the covenant is broken in the midst of the week. So the great tribulation. From the time that Antichrist installs himself on the throne in the temple at Jerusalem, and the abomination, that idolatrous, you know, unholy arrangement in the temple, from that time shall be 1,290 days. Think, hey, why is it 1,290 days? Because we're used to seeing 1,260 days. We've just added 30 days. What's that about? And the answer is, truthfully, we don't really know. But it's the same 1,260 days with another month added besides. And in that month, we can imagine that maybe there's some sort of organization of Christ's government saying, you are going to oversee this city, and you're going to oversee this city, and maybe the Lord is just setting up his government. Well, we don't know exactly. But then, to make matters even more curious, there's another number here. So in verse 12, besides the 1260 and the 1290 days, watch this. Blessed is he that waiteth and cometh to the 1,335 days. So now we have 1,335 days. So I had 1260. All right, we get that 3.5 years. But then another 30 days to bring us to 1290. Okay, we get that. So 30 days into the millennium while we're organizing the millennial kingdom. But then 1335, now we're 45 days past the second coming of Christ. What happens in that 45-day period? And once again, we don't know, but since it says, blessed is the person who gets 45 days into the millennium, we can only imagine that this must be some sort of a celebration, a reward ceremony. We don't know what that is, but Daniel says, here's what's going to happen. 1,260 days of terrible trouble. And then Michael stands up and he delivers the people. And we go into the millennium, and 45 days into that, if you go 45 days into the millennium, you are one blessed person. And that's how the book of Daniel ends. No more information. So what you see, when Daniel was so right about all these other things, Daniel, how do the kingdoms go? Who takes over after Babylon? Well, that's Medo-Persia. Who takes over after Medo-Persia? Greece. How do you know that? That's 200 years from now. The Lord told me. Greece. And who takes over after Greece? A terrible kingdom. A mighty iron kingdom. And what happens then? Well, the kingdom has a special stage. And when it hits that special stage, Jesus returns, destroys all the kingdoms of the world, sets up his millennium. And Daniel knew all of those things. He was spot on, just perfect. And now you know what he says? He says to all of us, it's not over. Jesus is going to come, and if you will serve him well, blessed is that person who comes 45 days into the millennium. You want to serve the Lord. And Daniel was right about 100 other things, including the year when Jesus would die on the cross. If he says that you should serve him with a pure heart until the end comes and you'll be truly blessed, you can take that to the bank, and I hope you will.